Hey, this is Sam Hells, presenter and producer of the Profile podcast. Over the next few weeks, we're bringing you these bonus episodes where my colleague Andy Peck chats to the best and brightest experts on Christian leadership. Andy has spent 17 years conducting these brilliant conversations. We're bringing you the very best of them in these special midweek editions of the Profile podcast.
You're listening to the Profile. Christian leadership is not about our egos and agenda, but seeing God's goodness and ways advance for the good of everyone. In the light of the challenges of the last 12 months and the emotional toll it's taken on so many, I thought it would be valuable to look at sustaining ourselves as we lead, aware that sometimes the demands of life and leadership can overwhelm us. So I'm delighted to be joined by Will van der Hart. He's the Associate Vicar at St. Dionys, Parsons Green in London. He's also one of the directors of the Mind and Soul Foundation, which has resources that seek to explore emotional and mental health from a Christian perspective, which includes the Mind and Soul podcast on Premier Radio. He's the co-author of the Worry Book, the Guilt Book, and the Perfectionism Book, as well as The Power of Belonging. And he's also a giant worldwide coach. So welcome, Will, back to the Leadership Show.
Thanks so much, Andy. Great to be with you.
I found your books of enormous help as they give a kind of rigorous investigation of the topic and a capacity to help leaders think about their own lives. And of course, worry, guilt, perfectionism and belonging are all key areas for this pandemic. And as we look at stress and emotional burnout today.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, these things tend to get exacerbated by overextension. So where we might have worried a little bit before, or we might have been a little bit perfectionistic in our outlooks before, stress tends to magnify those. So we tend to worry more, we tend to feel more pathological guilt. That's guilt that's not really rooted in sin. We tend to feel, lean towards more perfectionistic behaviors, and also ask ourselves more catastrophic questions about our sense, our belonging and our place in the world. So it's been as everyone understands, an extremely difficult season from a leadership perspective in terms of emotional and mental health.
Well, I was going to ask you, have the last 12 months been for you? Have lots of people like me been getting in touch and saying, hey, we need your wisdom?
Yeah, I was just actually writing earlier on to the directors of our charity, to the trustees of our charity, the Mind and Soul Foundation, and just saying, because we are sorting out our EGM this month, about how overextended we were in terms of the amount of inquiries. I mean, I don't think we've, as an organisation, ever been busier. My colleague Dr. Kate Middleton's been everywhere, and both Chi-Chi, Rob and I are extremely busy. So yeah, there's a hunger for help. I mean, the silver lining of this cloud potentially is that leaders become more connected to their emotional health needs. But the challenges are significant, and it's going to take us a long time, I think, for us all to work through our reflective response to COVID, not just our immediate and our necessary response.
Well, maybe I could start by just kind of setting a few ground rules in terms of, definitions of how you see the whole kind of normal health for a leader.
Absolutely. I think the World Health Organization itself doesn't define mental health as something which is a set of clinical observations. It regards issues like our ability to make a productive contribution to society, a sign of our mental health and well-being. It looks at a much more sort of universal markers of well-being. And I think within the context of leadership, health is not a sort of state of reaching a position whereby we are doing everything right, but it's about having a level of self-awareness which enables us to continue the journey towards better leadership and better relationships. I'm very cautious around sort of very defined markers of achievement in leadership, because achievement, particularly in Christian leadership, is not marked by our bottom line or by our target achievement. It's marked by our character, our commitment, our relationships, and also is embodied by our well-being. Don't follow a leader, however inspirational they might be, if they don't demonstrate care of others and care of self. So I think it's really, really important that we recognize that leader health and well-being is often marked out by reflection and self-awareness. A leader who's healthy is a leader who's aware of their blind spots, seeking to grow, staying accountable, working through challenges. What leaders are definitely not are superhuman.
So talk us through the difference between the general tiredness that many would feel over this last year, called burnout, where it's gets to a more serious kind of category.
Yeah, so Andy, I think the first thing to say is that Christian leaders, by and large, overwork. So, I mean, our experience of supporting Christian leaders before COVID was that they were often in the overstretched state of being. I think polled now probably 10 years ago, EA pastors, 51% said that they were, constantly overextended or felt close to burnout. So overwork amongst clergy and pastors is common anyway. What happened with COVID is that we then asked those pastors to pivot incredibly quickly, take all their services online when many of them had no experience of kind of digital leadership, then manifestly change their working patterns and processes, and also deal with the reality of a pandemic for them personally and for their families and friends. And so, we've asked a huge amount of Christian leaders, particularly church leaders, but also leaders in every sphere of influence in society. We've asked a huge amount of ourselves and of one another. And this has been an incredible challenge. Hooke's law, if you did GCSE physics, relates to the old springs, that how many newtons of load could you apply to the string before it stopped returning to its original shape? And a spring without load is not a spring. It's just a coil of metal. A spring has to be under load in order to really serve its purpose and know its identity. Leaders are designed to carry a certain load. And this is what we call constructive stress. So a certain level of stress is actually helpful. Constructive stress is being under load and stressed to a level to which you can contract and then rest again. So if you've been working hard and well, you will have enjoyed that work. You'll be tired by that work. But ultimately, when you switch off at the end of the day, you'll be able to switch off. Now, constructive stress is difficult to destructive strain. Destructive strain is when the load becomes so great that the individual no longer returns to their original shape. In fact, often they can't rest. They feel agitated or lethargic. It affects interpersonal relationships, become more irritable. It can affect appetite and sleep, become sleepless, overeat or undereat, become more isolated, find less interest in socialization, and generally experience more feelings of hopelessness, anxiety, agitation, and dislocation. So there are specific, if you like, there's a specific moment at which we move from talking about being constructively stressed to destructively strained. And destructive strain is a precursor to burnout. Burnout is effectively when we are unable to function anymore in terms of our leadership capacity because we're so overstretched that we just haven't got the resources available to us to continue. So there is a classic performance bell graph which shows the stress of being understrained and then what we call productive stress, which takes you to the very top of that bell graph. But if you stay there for too long, you move into the destructive strain and overworking zone. And if you stay in there too long, then your performance drops right down to the floor again. And that becomes the burnout phase where you're no longer productive, but also you're unable to recover. And that's a long journey out. And I'd say, a lot of leaders right now will be able to relate very strongly to the destructive strain zone. And some will be able to relate quite strongly to the burnout zone as a direct result of what we've asked them to do over the last 12 months.
And it's worth perhaps adding, Will, is it that that this is not necessarily all negative things? So if you were seeing, quotes, revival or something really exciting happening in your church, you could still burn out as a result of it. It doesn't have to be all bad stuff.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's a very interesting stress scale which was made in 1969, which identifies the sort of stress life points. And those points are allocated to over 40 different areas of life. And some of the greatest stress points are obviously things like losing a child or divorce or, you know, serious illness. But there are about 12 different events within the 40 plus which relate to a positive event in life. Like getting married is incredibly stressful. Moving house is incredibly stressful. Getting a promotion at work is actually very stressful. Receiving an award is very successful, very stressful. And those things are all allocated stress points to them. So just because something is a good and positive experience does not mean it's not also a stressful experience. And what we can do very dangerously, I think, as Christian leaders, is when things are going well, we take the blessing as an encouragement to keep overworking. So we're like, oh, God has blessed me with this amazing opportunity. Now I've got to kill myself to make that opportunity a reality, because somehow God is master over that. So if it's a God opportunity, we lose all our sense of boundary and we begin to overwork. And as a result, we can suffer stress and burnout. So leaders need to be as concerned about the successful and positive experiences in their leadership as they should be about the negative and difficult ones.
Now, if we have a physical stress on our body, if we go for a run and we pull a muscle, it is very evident that we cannot move. And so we limp back and we have to rest. But it's a bit harder perhaps for people to spot when there is a psychological, emotional stress going on in their bodies. And you looked at this in The Power of Belonging and others of your books. So what would be the kind of, presumably being around others will be a key way in which we can spot whether we're under stress? Others can help us.
Well, it's a really good point. I mean, like the scale, the Holmes and Ray scale, which I just mentioned, we have to be aware of our load. And that's the first thing to do, is the work of preventing burnout begins before we burnt out. So Holmes and Ray's scale is a helpful tool, because they say, well, if you spend over 300 stress points within an 18-month period, you have an 80% probability of a burnout or breakdown. So we can actually, you know, they actually classified these events and saw them demonstrated in a scientific way. If you spend over 150 points, I think you have a 50% chance of burnout or breakdown. So what you have to have a level of, again, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, a level of self-awareness in leadership, which enables you to appraise your experience and ask yourself whether you might be at risk of burnout. So the hard work of leadership health doesn't begin when you break your leg. It begins before you break it. In physical terms, you can't know when you're going to break your leg. But in mental, emotional health terms, you can see the signs well before the emotional event takes place in the majority of cases. The thing about breakdown is it's much, much, much easier to change the flow of your emotional health before you've broken down than it is after you've broken down. You know, a broken arm might take 6 weeks to heal, but when you really burn out, it's often a 18-month to 2-year process to get your confidence back and recover. So it's not a sort of, this isn't a lightweight experience. This is a very serious experience for us to have. And it's one that can damage our careers and our confidence and our mental health. So the hard yards are done in advance of time. And again, Christian leaders are particularly at risk. They talk a lot about accountability, but often they make themselves accountable only to God. And even then they struggle to get down on their knees and pray. So when it comes to accountability, they say, oh, well, I'm accountable to God and there's a spiritual harvest. Therefore, I'm legitimized in burning myself out. I've even heard Christian leaders say things like, I'd rather burn out than fade away, as if it's virtuous to mistreat your body and your mind.
And presumably, of course, you would look at some of the New Testament examples, Jesus himself, the apostles. They worked hard at times, but evident, you know, Jesus himself got away, to the wilderness places to pray, to be rested. He took his disciples to do the same. The apostle Paul had an itinerant ministry, but he would have had times of downtime. He'd had times doing his tent making, whatever. So there was a kind of rounded life that they lived. They didn't burn themselves out.
Absolutely. Beginning of Mark's gospel, Jesus is at Simon Peter's mother's house. He heals her. then she waits on them and they obviously have their dinner. And then it says, and then the whole village appeared with people who wanted healing and deliverance. And then, you know, it says very early in the morning, whilst it was still dark, Jesus left the house and went up the mountain to pray. And what we know about that experience is that the whole village have been outside the house. There presumably are still people outside the house waiting to meet Jesus. Jesus tiptoes out of the house without anyone knowing, because then the disciples climb up the hill to find Jesus and they rebuke Jesus and say, everyone is looking for you. And now what's really interesting here is that you think that's quite a shocking scene. Jesus says, actually, I think in the NIV, Jesus slipped out of the house. And I don't think Jesus should slip anywhere. There should be sort of fanfares and trumpets and you know, palm branches. But Jesus really escapes that pressurized setting to spend time with God in prayer. And it's quite a shocking scene, because we'd all say, well, Jesus should hang around and make sure everyone is healed. But Jesus doesn't do that. He curtails his ministry because he has a priority of rest with the Father. And even then, he doesn't even accept the rebuke of the disciples. He gets in the boat. He says, let's leave this place, gets in the boat. And the next thing they know, they've crossed the sea. So, you know, Jesus' example is one of emotional health and well-being, but Jesus' disciples don't always take his advice. And Jesus forms a lot of his ministry around meals and around walks. Actually, meals are very good for us and walks are very good for us. What's not great for us is convening hundreds of meetings every day and doing 1,000 emails. Yeah. So, you know, Jesus was the most emotionally healthy person to ever walk the earth. I just wish we took a little bit more time to watch what he did and how he did it, because that would help all of us.
Sure. No, thank you, Will. We're obviously recording this at a time when many church leaders, particularly church leaders, will be anticipating, gathering again at some point in the next number of months. And there may be folk listening thinking, actually, I'm not feeling in a great shape for this. What would be some of the practical things you would say? I imagine you may not be saying anything that leaders listening won't know. And so I suppose I'm also asking the question, given that we know these things, why don't we do them?
Sure. Well, I mean, the first thing I'd say to leaders is, look, recognize the trauma you've been through. Like this is a trauma. And it's a trauma that has five stages. We call them five stages of collective trauma response. Mm. They're the impact phase, the heroic phase, the recovery, the disillusionment phase, the recovery phase, and then the wiser living phase. So five stages.
Okay.
And we are only just beginning to move now into stage three, which is the recovery phase. So we've had the impact stage, the heroic stage, the disillusionment stage, the fourth stage, I mean, which is the recovery stage, which is where we're beginning to really recognize how we're doing and beginning to take positive steps for our well-being. And so I guess I'd really encourage people to just tread very lightly and have very low expectations of themselves in terms of their extension. Some Christian leaders I've met have said things like, you know, COVID's a great opportunity for the church, or this is God rebalancing the world, and lots of really fantastical statements about, you know, what the benefits of COVID are. I'd say, look, this is an event that's just cost millions of people their lives, and it's a shocking event globally. If people haven't died, it's cost them their well-being, their livelihood, their commercial interests, their church well-being, and, you know, so many different things. We're impacted on so many different levels here. We need to grieve what we've lost before we can begin rebuilding. And I'd just encourage leaders not to have a sort of, not just run away from COVID with a sort of like, we're going to build back bigger, harder, faster. Let's just learn the lessons of whatever it is that we've experienced. Let's try and heal together. And let's be really generous with ourselves. It really makes me uncomfortable and nervous hearing the sort of flip back narrative of, you know, now we're going to like break through and we're going to accelerate and all sorts of great phrases, as if we've had a couple of weeks where we've not been able to do anything. We've been snowed in or something, and now, you know, we're frustrated, so we're going to get back at it. This is a major, major life trauma, and trauma takes a long time to recover from. And I would really encourage leaders to set quite low expectations. I mean, my encouragement here, I'm part of a team here. I work under a vicar called Tim. He's brilliant. And we're having a conversation this week just saying, we need to look at the summer as a season of rest, not a season of acceleration. We need to be thinking that June, July, and August are going to be quiet months for us as we prepare maybe for a September relaunch, but actually where we look after ourselves and take the rest that we really need.
Yeah.
Leaders might not have been working in the way that they envisaged that they'd be working, but they've still been working. You know, leaders have been incredibly busy, but not in ways in which they necessarily measure as busy activities or productive activities. But they've been overextended. I mean, I was saying to people that you've been plugged into an adrenal drip for the past year. No wonder you're exhausted. No wonder your sleep is poor. No wonder you feel listless and agitated. We need time to heal. And this is that time.
Yeah. And of course, some have also been trying to manage a family life.
My wife is a priest in training. We're trying to share the load. And I recognize that there's been probably a disproportionate burden of responsibility on females in the home. I hope that is changing and that there's a burden of equality. But it's that extension is extremely stressful. We found it stressful in my family. It's not just the stress of homeschooling. It's the stress of the anxiety of your own children. It's trying to parent your children well. It's trying to support your children's emotional health when they are struggling. Because of their lack of contact with friends and their lack of ability to play outside. So, you know, leaders need to think about themselves again holistically, that your leadership as a Christian leader is not defined by your title or your role, it's defined by your application in all settings. So if I'm a good leader, that means I'm parenting to the best of my ability in the home. If I'm a good leader, that means I'm a husband to the best of my ability in my marriage. If I'm a good leader, then I'm preaching to the best of my ability in the church. But it's not one thing that defines me as a great leader. And I'm sure I'm not a great leader. I'm working on these different fields of expression of leadership. And that's why, again, it's so important that leaders recognize your extension has been on all fronts. You know, I do a lot of coaching, for leadership, but also coaching relationship. And now, I've genuinely seen a lot of people's relationships really falter during COVID.
Well, I'm sure you would recommend that everyone has some sort of mentoring or coaching within their life. There'll be some listening, perhaps, for whom that's a new idea, and some perhaps even counselling would be a newish idea. And they may be listening and thinking, crumbs, actually, I'm not sure. You know, I think I've gone a bit too far in terms of the stress, burnout or whatever, and I need a bit of outside help. What are the kind of things you do in Giant Worldwide coaching, and what's your kind of advice to people who are wondering about one-on-one work?
Well, as you say, I'm a huge advocate of one-to-one coaching, counselling, psychotherapy. You know, I think the key thing is that, you know, if we're going to do well in leadership, we can't assume that we can do well alone. That there are no badges or prizes or medals for doing it on your own. And all of the best leaders in our world today have support. You know, every great leader has a great team around him. And if you want to be a good leader, then you need to be accountable to someone. You need to receive advice from someone. You need a sounding board. You need a chance to talk through issues that you happen to be facing. You need to be able to be unburdened as a leader. And stay objective, and that requires other people's opinion. So, I mean, I'm a very integrative and, you know, emotionally centered coach. Giant is a fantastic schema. It's got books behind it like The Five Voices and The 100X Leader. So it does a lot of work around personality diagnostic. And I try and coach my clients in line with their own personality profile. We use The Five Voices model, which is, you know, it's not dissimilar to colors, I guess, quite a few people might have done the colors before. And actually what we're looking at is trying to enable a leader to be the best leader they can be, to run in their own lane. But whatever the nature of the relationship, coach or counselor, the key thing is that everybody in leadership has someone they can go to confidentially and talk through their life experience. And I think one of the great idols of our world is self-reliance. And it's hugely problematic. It causes all sorts of ills in society. I believe we're called to God-reliance, But God reliance is not an excuse for a lack of other reliance. You know, Jesus, as you say, he relied on the Father, but he had disciples. And, you know, every leader, every Christian leader should be reliant on God, but also reliant on those that God has placed around them to be accountable and to receive support. And that's a really key facet of successful leadership in my experience. And I've been a Christian leader. I've been an Anglican priest now for, I think, 16 or 17 years this year. I've seen a lot of people crash and I've seen a lot of people thrive. And I could pretty much say without qualification, the people who've thrived are people who've received support, maybe not officially counseling or coaching support, but support by being vulnerable and accountable to others. And the people who've crashed have largely tried to go alone, be unaccountable, be unknown by others, and have often either burnt themselves into the ground or made some terrible moral decision that's led them away from Christian leadership. So,
well, Will, it's been terrific chatting with you, and there's been tons of wisdom. I would urge listeners to listen again. You can do that online on the on-demand section, because you've given us so much treasure that we need to, some of it we need to take out and look at again. So thank you so much for all that you've shared. Obviously, there's the Mind and Soul website that people can go to if they want to learn out a little bit more.
Yeah, that's right, Andy. Thanks so much for having me on again. If people want to check us out, just mindandsoulfoundation.org, or we're on all the social channels at Mind and Soul UK. And I'm also on all the socials, just at Will van der Hart. And we'd love to carry on the conversation there. Thanks, Andy, for what your fantastic show and your amazing ministry of encouraging leaders and all of your wisdom. It's hugely appreciated.
Well, thank you, Will. That's very kind of you to say. Bless you.
You're listening to The Profile.
Thank you, Andy, for bringing us that great interview this week on The Profile podcast. This show is brought to you by the UK's leading Christian magazine, Premier Christianity. If you enjoyed this episode, you are sure to love the magazine, which features news, analysis, opinion on all that God is doing in the UK church and beyond. Check out brand new articles published every day on the biggest issues facing the church and the world at premierchristianity.com. We'll be back on Friday with another in-depth conversation with a leading Christian right here on The Profile podcast. Join us then.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.